Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively welcoming, finally, this is our first segment. It's football season, for real. It's football season. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, get it back out on the road, courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We have the Gold Rush Sevens Doublers. We had a lucky batch of these last time down at Faithley's 2 weeks ago. We're going to be at State Fair on the 13th of August with our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare, as well as Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping my water crystal clear. And we'll be doing that on the 13th with Angela Alsobrooks, Prince George's County. Got to make sure I don't say PG County because I drove through there the other night on the way to D.C. Prince George's County executive Angela Alsobrooks, who was running for Senate. We'll also have Larry Hogan on. I have invited the former governor on. I have not heard from his people, but all things political. I can't imagine politics would be in anybody's brain here this weekend. Luke Jones joins us now. We're going to try to make you forget about politics for at least a couple of minutes here as Raven season begins. I've got my Curio Wellness Purple Zero. Well, it's like a Roquan Smith look here for me. How are you? How was vacation? I hope you didn't think anything about football or worry about Lamar Jackson, because you have all of that to worry about now, in addition to the trading deadline, Luke.
I must admit, I thought about training camp a little bit, mainly because I got back very late Saturday night, and the Ravens hit the field Sunday for their first full team workout of training camp. A little bit earlier start to training camp. Keep in mind, they open up the season in Kansas City for the season opening NFL game, but lots of excitement. You know, your typical early camp headlines of who's in good shape, who's on the field, who's not, and lo and behold, Lamar Jackson, dealing with a little bit of an illness at the start of training camp, was sent home on Sunday and started feeling not so great on Saturday. So, yeah, we'll see what that is. Look, that's not even a blip on the concern radar. 6.5, you know, 6+ weeks before the opener.
Well,
but
I know he's
not ideal.
Vaccinated. I know that much. So much I'm sure of. So.
Yeah, but I mean, COVID or not, this is something we've seen from Lamar. At least once or twice a year, he's missing a practice because of being sick. You know, I don't know if immune system, diet, whatever it is. I mean, I'm not saying it's some major problem, although he did miss the Bears game a few years back.
I don't get sick anymore because I stay 6 feet away from people and I don't shake hands with people. And Cal Ripken never shook hands with people 35 years ago. And I used to remember that. And he never got sick. And I used to get sick all the time shaking hands with people at the barn. I think, you know, I think it's literally as much as just staying away from people. That's there's my little thing, is that we get each other sick. Don't touch as many people as you should. There.
Okay. People. Yeah, I guess. There are plenty of people that shake hands and everything and don't get sick, though. I mean, it's just to get sick. I don't know. But yeah, not a big deal, other than felt bad for the fans in attendance on Sunday who are waiting for number 8 to run out of the field house, and lo and behold, he never ran out there. So they got a heavier dose of Josh Johnson, which, look, Josh Johnson, I looked at it, he's made 2 starts since 2018, and he's their primary backup quarterback. So even if Lamar misses a couple, you know, he missed a couple, missed some OTAs, as we talked about back in the spring, if he misses a couple practices here in late July, certainly not going to alter the trajectory of the 2024 season. So, you know, you want to see what Josh Johnson looks like with the ones. You know, you don't want to see him playing with the ones come September and beyond, but
I've seen him play without
primary
practicing.
Backup.
I'm a Josh Johnson guy.
I mean, I guess, sure. I would say I'm not anti Josh Johnson. I'm not being a guy of anyone that's not Lamar Jackson for the Ravens right now at quarterback. I mean, that's just, you know, we've talked about this. We talked about this with Joe Flacco a decade ago. You lose your franchise quarterback, then things change. But, you know, I don't think this is anything that a little bit of rest and some fluids and all that won't remedy. I assume John Harbaugh certainly didn't sound too concerned as he was expressing and laying out his vision for Lamar Jackson becoming the greatest quarterback in NFL history. Certainly some fodder for the talking head shows and all of that, but it reminded me a little bit of Joe Flacco on our very airwaves, 12 years ago at this point in time, talking about thinking he was the best quarterback in the NFL. Joe was never the best quarterback in the NFL, but someone's going to think that, right? You want someone to think they're the best. You want someone to have the vision that they are going to be the best or the greatest of all time. But as the critics would point out, and as you and I have talked about, they got to win a Super Bowl. For that conversation to have any weight to it, you've got to have championships. And Lamar understands that. John Harbaugh understands that as he's saying that to the media. This entire team, you know, that's been so accomplished in the regular season over the last 5, 6 years, and awards and Pro Bowls and regular season number one seed and home field advantage and all of that, you know, they've got to break through. We've talked about that. So, you know, I don't have any problem with what John Harbaugh said in terms of putting that out there, but it does put a target on your back to be mocked if you continue to fall short in January. And they know that. So I assume they're okay with putting that target on their back in the same way that Flacco put a target on his back 12 years ago and then went out and backed it up and won a Super Bowl and got paid and all of that. So we'll see how it plays out. But for day one, on what was a pretty underwhelming day one in terms of highlights and buzz when you don't have your best player out on the field, John Harbaugh certainly provided a headline that I'm sure, again, all the talking heads and all the aggregate sites out there certainly appreciate it.
Offensive line, we're going to talk about that. It's going to be a constant source. What else are you looking at when you're out there other than who's playing left guard, who's playing right tackle, what's that rotation going to look like, how are the feet moving? Because there's no physical activity going on out there at the battle zone of the offensive and defensive lines. It's more about alignment and assignment technique and knowing where you're supposed to be at this point. Offensive line, that'll be the focus. That'll be what we talk about for 6 weeks. What else are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big name that I'm going to be watching, and right now with Lamar being sick at the very start of training camp and not knowing if, you know, does he miss 1 day, 2 days, whatever it is, you know, there's obviously plenty of time, but, you know, where's Rashad Bateman fitting in? You know, we've talked so much about his injuries and last year it being so apparent that he and Lamar Jackson were just not on the same page on the field. I don't think it's, you know, I've said this. I want to tread carefully here. When we talk about lacking chemistry, I think there's a quick snap judgment to say, oh, well, they don't get along or they don't like each other or anything like that. And I, you know, I don't get that kind of a sense. I'm not suggesting that, but I think in terms of just them two on the field, it just hasn't, you know, it hasn't manifested to consistent success. You know, I mean, we go back to Bateman where he was at the beginning of 22, where it looked really good for 3 weeks and then he got hurt. Last year, he missed much of the spring, missed the start of training camp, and he just never got on the same page with Jackson. As Lamar was trying to, you know, get on the same page with Zay Flowers and Odell Beckham, and obviously had the chemistry with Mark Andrews and even Isaiah Likely, you know, with Bateman, it's just always felt a little off. So, you know, the Ravens give Bateman the very modest contract extension, was about circumstance as much as anything else. You know, kind of deal that if Bateman takes a step forward, that deal will be a bargain. You know, even if he doesn't take a step forward, that deal's not going to be a disaster. You know, it's not like they're giving him $15 million a year or anything like that. So how's that looking? How's that coming along? You know, is Rashad Bateman consistently getting the ball in practice? And that doesn't mean as the number one receiver. I think Zay Flowers is their number one wide receiver. But are we seeing progress there? Because I think from a physical standpoint, I think from a talent standpoint, even looking at the metrics, you know, Pro Football Focus and all the football nerd type sites will tell you that Rashad Bateman separates. Rashad Bateman runs pretty good routes. It just hasn't translated to him and Jackson connecting. So I'm watching that. You know, I think running back is interesting, but behind Derrick Henry in terms of, yeah, I think Justice Hill is going to be the number two, but Justice Hill has also been one of their best special teams players over the last 4 or 5 years. Does he take a step back from that involvement because he's your number two back and someone's got to run the ball when Derrick Henry isn't on the field? You know, he's not going to run the ball every single carry that running backs get. So, you know, what's that look like? You know, do they have a number three running back? You know, is it Ali, the rookie? You know, is he ready? Is he showing much, you know, to be a factor? So you have that. And on the defensive side, for me, now that they have added Eddie Jackson, you know, the former two-time Pro Bowl safety from the Bears, who Roquan Smith obviously teamed with and gave the Ravens some good intel. I think that's a good number three safety option for them. So I think that question is settled a little bit at this point in time. Just want everyone to stay healthy.
That was a 6-month question, right? Like literally that was a question going into the draft, coming out of the draft and saying, where are they going to be with that position? And especially it's a position that they've been trying to fortify for years and signing players. And even when we talk about Kyle Hamilton, doesn't play like a normal safety position.
Well, I mean, you don't want Kyle Hamilton to play like that. You want Kyle Hamilton to move around. I think Kyle Hamilton could play off the ball at a very high level if that's what the only thing you wanted him to do. But why would you? He's a positionless player. He really is. That's a positionless defense has become a buzz term, with analytics. I mean, I started referencing this, when you and I would talk 3-4 years ago, something like that. But Kyle Hamilton's the ultimate positionless guy because you don't want to pigeonhole him into just being, a strong safety or someone who's playing off the ball if you're playing too high. You want to move him all over the place. I mean, we saw him at the nickel so much as a rookie, a little less last year, but still plenty. And I think what you're going to see this year, I could see Kyle Hamilton being more of a dime at times because I think
– I was going to say he's more of a linebacker the way they use him.
But I think what you're going to see, and we saw this a few years back, remember when the Ravens had all their issues at inside? This was even pre-Patrick Queen, that the issues they had at inside linebacker, the year they brought in Josh Bynes and LJ Fort in like week 4 because Patrick Owosu and Kenny Young couldn't get the job done. Like they missed CJ Mosley and they were really stuck there. What did they end up doing? They played a ton of dime. And Chuck Clark would come into the box and basically be a linebacker in those situations. I think with Patrick Queen being gone, and this is not an indictment on Trent Simpson whatsoever, I think the Ravens are optimistic about his ability to step in to that Will spot next to Roquan Smith. But that said, I don't think that necessarily means they're expecting Simpson to be a three-down linebacker all the time. And Patrick Queen wasn't that, at the start, or shouldn't have been from the start, let's say. So what that means is I think you have some opportunities here now that you've added Eddie Jackson and you have improved depth at corner. You still have Arthur Millett, who had an interception on Sunday, someone who the Ravens brass, Eric DaCosta and Harbaugh, are very quick to remind everyone, hey, we have all these guys and we added Wiggins and we added TJ Tampa and we just signed Eddie Jackson, but don't forget about Arthur Millett. He played well for us last year and they're not wrong. He did play well for them. So you have all these pieces. And you have a question mark as your other starting inside linebacker. Again, they're optimistic about Simpson, but I think you have to be realistic as well. I think there's opportunity for them to line up and play more dime, whether it's Millett at nickel and Hamilton at dime, whether it's moving Marlon Humphrey inside and getting Nate Wiggins onto the field. I think they have so many pieces to be multiple and to do so many different things that I wouldn't be shocked to see more dime. And I think that's a role Hamilton could play at a very high level, but he's going to do everything. We've seen this. He can blitz. He obviously covers. He hits. I mean, he is such a dynamic football player that, I say this with no disrespect to Roquan Smith, who's still the heart of the defense and is still such a tremendous player at inside linebacker, but I expect Kyle Hamilton to be their best defensive player this year. And I think you can make an argument he was becoming that even last year. Again, no disrespect to Roquan. It's a testament to just how talented Hamilton really is. So I think with adding Eddie Jackson, replacing Geno Stone in that role, because we know they've used so many three safety looks, knowing that Marcus Williams has had some injury issues the last couple of years, you bring in a guy that, look, Eddie Jackson, let's be clear, he's several years removed from being a Pro Bowl player. He's not a Pro Bowl safety anymore, but I think in the role that he's going to be asked to play, I think it makes sense on paper. You never know with Father Time and all that.
These veteran guys, right? I mean, this is a Harbaugh, Ozzie kind of now at the Costa kind of move to fortify with veterans. I mean, look, we talk about what happened last year with Clowney, who's gone. We talk about what happened last year with Van Noy, who's here. And this is another one of those sort of darts to find that kind of a player who's a veteran.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention Arthur Millett or Ronald Darby, who played starting caliber, kind of cornerback for them last year in a year where Marlon Humphrey couldn't stay healthy. So I went through safety and that has kind of been solidified on paper. Again, you're one injury away from that equation changing, you know, that, and that's the case at most positions. So for me, I'm looking at outside linebacker. You know, you just mentioned it, no Jadeveon Clowney. You know, David Ajabo looks like he's full go at this point in time. I'm not saying he's an is, but he certainly has the talent to be a factor. But he's got to develop. You know, he's got to stack practices. You know, the best thing that could happen for David Ajabo is not that he's starting week one opposite Adafe Owe. It's that he is practicing every day and out there every day and stacking and developing and getting reps. You know, one thing that we kind of forget because it's been lost because of all the injuries is as talented as Ajabo was at the University of Michigan, there was a perception that he was a green prospect at that point in time, that he needed some more seasoning, that he would be a guy that, okay, he could be a situational guy for you from day one, but he still needs to develop. He didn't play a ton, right? Yeah, exactly. So that's the kind of player that he just needs to practice and play. So I'm not saying you put all your eggs in that basket. I think Owe and Van Noy are going to be the guys doing the heaviest lifting. And I think Malik Harrison as an early down Sam outside linebacker for you. But, you know, they need a job out to step forward. You know, they're going to need, you know, you look at someone like Tavius Robinson, you know, in his second year, who played quite a bit as a rookie. You know, can he take a step forward as far as being a more consistent edge player? So, you know, offense, to your point, offensive line is going to take so much of the oxygen in terms of what we're really watching. You know, I mentioned Bateman. I think they still want a blocking tight end to emerge that isn't Patrick Ricard, so you're not quite as predictable as far as some of the fronts you're using, you know, some of the formations you're using there. You know, I mentioned, you know, number two, number three running back. How's that look? But on defense, I think the defensive line is pretty much set. You know, maybe Travis Jones pushes for more snaps, you know, maybe takes some snaps away from Michael Pierce, who's a year older. But the defensive line, I think, for the most part, is set. Inside linebacker, I mentioned Trent Simpson. I mean, you know, they're going to let him sink or swim. I don't think there's an obvious alternative if he struggles. That's why I said they might just, the alternative might be that they play a lot more dime, you know, especially in passing downs. But
well,
you know, secondary
Clowney,
for the
right?
Most.
I mean,
oh yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's my point. I mean, that production has to come from someone. And yeah, you can be confident that Adafe Owe is going to take that step forward. But keep in mind, Adafe Owe was already part of this rotation. So there are snaps to be
has
won, whether it's Ajabo.
To you, Adafe Owe?
Owe? Yes and no. I think for me, I thought he was better last year than he was in year two. Keep in mind, year two, he had, what, the shoulder surgery, and that hurt him in the off season in terms of training. He was a little thinner than I think they wanted him to be.
I'm waiting on him, right? I'm waiting.
Yeah,
on
no,
him.
I hear you. Like, I don't think he's – let me be clear. I don't think he's been a bad player. I think bust would be too strong for him because, what, he was the 31st pick. You know, you're not talking about – this isn't Suggs or Bulware or someone like that who was picked in the top 10.
But you wanted to see some sort of level
that
of Matt
said,
Judon production, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that – see, Owe is an interesting case study because what you'll hear a lot of coaches and football analytics types talk about is pressure. You know, pressures, putting heat on the quarterback and what that does in terms of what that does itself. And also from a predictive standpoint, you'll hear nerdier football types who look at data, look at trends, look at other examples in the history, you know, recent history of the game, let's say. And they'd say, if someone has a lot of pressures and is getting close to the quarterback very consistently, they often say that's more predictive of getting sacks in the future than if someone just has an out of nowhere kind of year where circumstantially it comes together and they have 10 sacks, but they're not really putting a lot of pressure on the quarterback otherwise, right? I mean, hypothetically, you could be deemed a great pass rusher if you get to the quarterback one time every game, right? If you bring them down 12 out of those 16, then you've got 12 sacks and people are talking about you going to the Pro Bowl. But if you honestly only get heat on the quarterback 16 times all year, you're not very good. So sacks can be circumstantial sometimes. Owe has not recorded a ton of sacks. That's obvious. But if you look at his pressure rate last year, it really bumped up big time from where it was in previous years. Now, that still has to, he has to continue that, right? That can't just be, oh, well, you get close to the quarterback and that's it. You know, that's, they want more. They want him to get to the quarterback more. He wants to get to the quarterback more. So this is a huge year for him. They picked up his fifth year option. So they clearly are betting on him taking a step forward, because, you know, a fifth year option is not, obviously not something that's terribly prohibitive long term for your salary cap, especially in this day and age where TV money has the cap going up and up and up every year. But at the same time, to me, that showed that they're betting on him having more than four or five sacks this year. You know, I think they're betting on him being a guy that is at least in that 8 to 10 territory, at least, which is where Clowney was last year, you know. So, you know, I'm not saying it's a one for one. Again, you're going to need a couple of those younger guys that are even less proven than Owe to step up. And, you know, people have asked me, could they add a veteran pass rusher? You know, I'm not sure from having talked to some people in the organization. I'm not sure there's a whole lot out there on the open market that they feel is markedly better than what they have. And I think there is a sense of wanting to see these young guys play and wanting to see, you know, wanting to see Ajabo develop, wanting to see Tavius Robinson develop. I haven't even mentioned him because he's on NIR right now. Adisa Isaac, their third round pick out of Penn State. You know, he's dealing with a hamstring still. You know, it sounds like he's, you know, trying to get back, trying to get close, you know, but that was a pretty significant hamstring that he was dealing with back in the spring, and he's still not fully right. So for him, it makes it tough. He's another guy like Ajabo, for example, who you want to see him play and practice and get reps and develop. So, you know, they've got a lot of inventory at that position. You know, Buck Showalter always talked about this. I've cited this over and over the years, where you can talk about inventory, but how much depth is actually there? They have a lot of young inventory at outside linebacker, but how much depth is really there? And to your point, look, I'm not saying I would have matched what Carolina is giving Clowney, but that doesn't mean it's not going to be difficult to replace what he did for you last year, because he was really, really good for them. And it was a really good fit. So,
and this, you know, time last year, it wasn't,
how much can you really,
about, right? So, I mean, there's something out there, somebody we're not talking about who's going to make a difference. And it may be an Ajabo, like, who most of us have forgotten about, like, since draft day.
Yeah. 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 And like I said, I mean, look, I'm not saying they won't add a veteran player, but, you know, I think there is a sentiment within the organization. And look, a year ago at this time, we were talking about Justin Houston still coming back. I don't think he had signed with the Panthers at that point. So we were speculating whether that would happen for the third year in a row, where they'd sign him later in the offseason. So, you know, we're going to see how this plays out, but I definitely get the sense that they really want to see one of these young guys step forward. They really do. And frankly, they need that. You could talk all you want about everything you do in the secondary. And look, I think Zach Orr is still going to do a lot of the sim pressures and the unpredictability that Mike McDonald did, that Wink Martindale did before that, you know, in terms of blitzing guys from different spots on the field. They're going to manufacture a lot of that. That's not going to change. And that's why it's nice to have guys like Kyle Hamilton and Arthur Millett, who can blitz from the secondary and blitz very effectively from the secondary. But that said, there's still a time and place where you need your four-man rush, right? You need someone, and that's where Matabike from the inside helps immensely, because you've got something as an inside pass rusher that a lot of teams don't have. So that hypothetically should help your edge rushers, but you still need to be able to get pressure from the edge. And, you know, Kyle Van Noy, even him, I mean, Van Noy's coming off of a career year. You know, his 9 sacks that he had last year, I mean, that was a career high for him. And, you know, the thing I'll point out with Van Noy, you know, he's at this point, he's 33 years old. You know, is he going to continue to fight off Father Time? And I think that right there is also more reason to have young guys, because then you can keep Van Noy on more of a pitch count. You don't want to have to play him too much. I think that's evident as well. So I think outside linebacker, you know, the whole edge picture is still very much to be determined. We know Owe's going to play a ton, Owe's going to start. We know Van Noy is going to be very meaningful in the rotation, even if he's not going to be on the field on first down in the base defense. Again, I think Malik Harrison will be that early down Sam linebacker as he was last year. But, you know, hey, Tavius Robinson, David Ajabo, Malik Ham, Adisa Isaac, anyone else, any undrafted rookie, you know, There are snaps out there to be won. I mean, there's no question about that. So I think that's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. And also interesting from the through looking through the lens of the you have an offensive line that's in such a state of flux in terms of what that's going to look like. So you've got a pass rush that you're evaluating and an O-line that you have guys trying to win jobs. It does make for a really interesting camp. Maybe not on day one when you're still ramping up, in day two when you're still ramping up, but these days when they're in full pads, I think you're going to see a lot of competition because there are jobs to be won. There are snaps, rotation snaps to be won on either side of that offensive line. So I think it's going to be, or either side of the line of scrimmage, I meant. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. But yeah, the outside linebacker, I think that's still very much up in the air what the rotation is going to look like come week one, and especially what that rotation is going to look like over the course of the season. In a perfect world, David Ajabo stays healthy. In a perfect world, Adisa Isaac gets on the field and is healthy and can contribute as the year goes on. But you need Owe to take another step. You need Van Noy to fight off Father Time another year and be as productive as he was last year. And, you know, that's not impossible, let me be clear, but that is asking a lot because, you know, typically when someone has a career year at age 32, they're probably not doing that again at age 33, you know, history would suggest. So that's all the more reason for it being go time for Owe, and especially those young guys who really aren't proven whatsoever.
25 training camps I did. I never liked any of them. I you know, for people that talk about Westminster or Owings Mills and the They both were incredibly wasteful for me. You go out there a lot. You watch them run around. It's hot as balls out there. Kids all screaming, wanting autographs. People line up to get tickets to go out there to watch this. Whenever I've been out there, I look at the people and I think, other than an autograph and some pictures where you get close to the players, it's certainly, you like it more than I ever did. One of the reasons Chad Steele threw me out, because I'm not going to go out there and sit there 8 hours a day and watch them run fungos. The one thing I would say that maybe has changed, and I don't know because I'm not there anymore, they used to really have this timing for these preseason games where the first game starters don't play much or a minute. Second game, play a little bit more. Third game, that's the real run out. Fourth game's a joke. We all know that. That went on for 25 years. I don't know this new cadence for any of this or how seriously they actually took the preseason games when starters were playing pieces of them so we could see it on a test drive. And I guess the greatest example, and you and I've covered college football forever, is we would always say, well, you know, Terps go out and play Kent State week one or whoever they're playing. There's no practice games. Nobody knows anything. It's all a big mystery. They still play these preseason games. They don't really expect anybody to go. They don't care much about it. They've gotten rid of them. They now do the scrimmage thing that we've talked about a little bit. With Green Bay, but the cadence and the timing of everything to me feels like Kansas City on the 5th, and that's all that matters. And we used to think about preseason a little bit differently when they were 2-2, home and away, players playing. I don't expect anybody named Roquan Smith or Lamar Jackson or anybody we've heard of or like to be any part of any of these games. And that's changed the whole dynamic at this time of the year for me to be like, well, game's on Friday. Nobody will be in Atlanta, but it'll be on and we can watch it for a couple of minutes and see something. I think all that kind of went away when the kid ripped his knee up in Washington a couple of years ago, sort of the end of the end of the end of any of that. And for that reason, I'm glad we have baseball. I'll say that, you know, baseball happens and the games matter and there's a trading deadline, but I don't mean to say, and I used to have a friend who was a former Washington football team fan, and he used to laugh at me with the Ravens back in the 90s and the aughts that we would sit here and do all this and take phone calls and all that. He's like, I'm a Redskin fan 30 years. Nothing matters till they kick the ball off. All this it's garbage. You Ravens fans, you go to these nobody in the league cares about any of this. Well, we're now there, and nobody in the league cares about any of these games. If you have a ticket for one of them or whatever, you don't expect anything out of the actual games. At least I don't anymore. They're unwatchable. I'm just glad I'm not Sandusky and have to figure out how to say everybody's names and all the numbers and all that stuff in these games. But there really is something about the preseason being devalued from the fan base perspective in that way that it's almost like why they even bother playing them to some degree. They make some money and whatever, you know, they get a band to come and play all-time low, plays halftime or something, and that's cool. I've long since stopped giving them money, PSL money, for this crap. But this is a long, almost 7 weeks getting ready for a football game, and not a lot happens in terms of bright light shining other than injuries.
Yeah, I mean, look, everything you just said through an entertainment lens, through a wins and losses lens, through a established starter lens, it's true, right? I mean, we don't need to see
Lamar
Jackson.
I'm talking about from a value judgment standpoint that we used to just put these games on and say, oh, Bobby Rainey can play a little bit, or look at Snoop run around with the second team, or, hey, we found a guy in the second half that looks like he might make the team. I mean, just a little bit of that. Even that part of the – and it was always awful. I'm not like – you and I would always say, hey, the game's Friday. The game, and then the game would be on and be like, oh, my God, I forgot how awful this is. And then Harbaugh screaming at Brent Harris in the middle of a preseason game. So I know they take it seriously out there. It's one of the reasons they threw me out, because I don't take all this all that seriously. But I just think from a fan's perspective, this is a long slog of 7 weeks of not a whole lot anymore. that it starts, we shoot the gun and say, training camp, go out there, Luke. And then, well, how'd they look? And then these reels start with Bobby Trossett of who made the best catch on a practice field to try to get clicks. It's insane. I mean, I've always hated this time of the year, but I really pay less attention to it now because there's less to see from a fan's perspective, I think.
Well, I mean, for the games themselves, yes. I mean, training camp, look, I mean, training camp has always been about process more so than results, and interpreting the, and when I say results, you know, the highlight play, like it's, you know, I can go through so many different receivers over the years who make the highlight catch or have a good few days of practice and then they're never heard from again. I can talk about the guy that was great in the preseason opener and all the fans are talking about him. But then at the same time, guys like me who are out there every day tell you, oh, it's nice to see the kid made a play because I haven't seen him make a play over the last 2 weeks of training camp. So you have, that's always been there, right? You know, the games themselves, none of the established starters play. I do think you're going to see the offensive line, you know, guys that are starting week one on the offensive line, they're going to play in the preseason. Now, Linderbaum's not going to play. I assume Ronnie Stanley's not going to play. But beyond that, I mean, my goodness, those guys are going to have to play because they're trying to figure out who's going to start. But you also always have to remember to take all this with a grain of salt. And I'll give you my most recent example, Nestor. So the Ravens, when they signed Eddie Jackson officially on Sunday, they had to make a move to make roster space for him. They released Jordan Tolles, undrafted rookie, safety from Morgan State, Baltimore kid, who you can go back and look at my 12 Ravens thoughts from OTAs and minicamp. I thought he had a pretty nice spring. I thought he practiced well. I'm not saying I had him on my 53-man roster, but I thought he played well enough that it's like, hey, you know, if he has a good spring or has a good training camp and a good preseason, you know, maybe he'll stick around on the practice squad. Maybe if someone gets hurt, he gets the 53rd spot on the roster. Well, they cut him on Sunday. So that's a reminder right there, again, that reiterates anything that happens in the spring really doesn't matter. It's a reminder that what happens this first week or two really doesn't matter. And when I say it doesn't matter, not from John Harbaugh's perspective or Todd Monken's perspective or Zach Orr's perspective or any of these players who are preparing for the season. We know that it matters through that lens. We're talking about through the lens of observation and what guys like me, and that was another example. I'm no Eric DaCosta or Ozzie Newsome when it comes to evaluating players, because a guy that I thought looked pretty good in the spring just got cut and didn't even make it to the second full day of training, didn't even make it to the first full day of training camp.
Which
so
is
again,
amazing considering if you're
really
fogging a mirror up there,
all
there,
about
you're on the roster at this time of the year, right? Like literally, it's hard to get cut this time of year. It says you can't make the team. They let a lot of guys around there that can't make the team.
Yeah, I mean, if you had told me that they're going to have to cut someone for Eddie Jackson. I probably could have given you 10 other names that I would have thought would have been cut before Jordan Tolles. Again, I'm not, this isn't to belabor the point about Jordan Tolles or that Luke Jones thinks he's a good player or worthy of being on the roster. It's to illustrate that just because someone looks good in May doesn't mean they're going to look good in August. Just because someone looks good in late July doesn't mean that they're going to look good in the preseason. Just because someone looks good in one of these fake preseason games that no starters play doesn't mean that they're, one, even going to make the roster, and two, if they do, that they're going to make an impact in September and October and December and so on. So it's all about process. It, from an entertainment standpoint, from an entertainment value, you know, much of what you said about the preseason game specifically. Now, as a kid, even as, you know, someone in my early 20s before I was in the media, I like going out to practice. Like, I didn't do it every day, of course. You know, I had a summer job and all that, but I like going out and seeing what the team was going to look like. But to your point, there is always a sense of excitement when training camp starts, especially in years where the Orioles were 30 games under 500 at this point in time. But there is a sense of once it starts, then it's like, oh, wait, this is kind of hurry up and then wait for real stuff to start happening. So that's part of it. And that's where, look, I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, I'm not going to make observations. You can go read my 12 Ravens thoughts from day one at BaltimorePositive.com right now. Please do. But I always offer that caveat that, look, take this for what it is. It's a little bit of a football fix. It's a little bit of conversation. But in a big picture sense, Joe Schmo catching a touchdown on July 21st on the backfield, you know, the far field in Owings Mills, that doesn't mean he's making the roster. It doesn't mean he's on the roster bubble. It doesn't mean he has any shot at being on the practice squad. But if that same guy starts doing that every day and then it shows up in the preseason games, and then it's a different conversation. So just so we all understand the proper context, then yeah, we can talk about this stuff. And yeah, there's interest, and yeah, there's important stuff to watch. But you have to understand, and that's why I've always said that with the preseason games themselves, that those are just tiny snapshots within the whole scope of what you're evaluating. And for those players who show up in a preseason game when they haven't made a darn play in 3 weeks of practices before that, you know, it's probably not going to move the needle in terms of their chances. So, you know, we just have to understand that. And if we do, then we can have the proper amount of discourse, which is some, and understanding position battles. But to your point, the only thing of consequence that could happen on Sunday when they were out on the field for the first time was not Lamar Jackson missing the first day of practice because he was ill, or, you know, some rookie free agent making a touchdown catch or anything like that. It's what? Staying healthy, getting your work in, and then get out. I mean, that's really what it is. So, you know, with that understanding, yeah, you know, you get to a point where the season starts and, yeah, there's some preseason starts and training camp starts, and there's excitement, obviously, because we love football around here. This team's won a lot of football games over the last close to three decades now, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, at the same time, we know that September 5th is a really long way away. And we know that January is even longer in terms of waiting for what's really going to matter. But in the meantime, yeah, we can talk about who looks good in helmets and shorts the first week and who looks good when the pads come on. But we just need to remember to take all of that with a grain of salt, because lots and lots goes into who exactly is going to be on the team. And we know that the preseason games themselves, not going to see many of your, you know, not going to see any of your established talent, really. And really, you're just at best going to be looking at some position competitions and see how they play out.
Yeah, Luke, you said something about your fandom in your 20s and going out there to see how the team looks. I'm just going to go out and see how the team looks. They look purple, is what they look in July, in August even, but it's July, for crying out loud. Luke's got 10 more days of July out in Owings Mills. They do not allow me. They allow him. I'll let you figure out why that is. Same thing with the baseball team. I'll be writing about that as we get up on Labor Day and as the season starts. We have a very exciting trading deadline this week. We have a very, very exciting a roster of folks here to talk about it this week as well. Luke is out at Baltimore Positive. We're going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road beginning August 13. That is our next big day. We're going to be with Angela Alsobrooks, running for senator over at State Fair in Catonsville. We're also going to be at Fadley's in August. And then The Oyster Tour is going to be in September. Lots and lots of cool places and lots of new sponsors too, including Pizza John's back on with us as well. We'll be doing a crab cake tour over there. Yes, they have a crab cake and it's legit, but I'll be getting the pizza over there as well. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery giving us the Gold Rush Sevens Doublers when we get back out on the road. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube Multi Care getting us out on the road. Make sure Luke gets out to Owings Mills and down to the ballpark, as well as our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water crystal clear. And I did have a plumbing issue last week, and I had to call them. I had a leak in an old drain, a 40-year-old drain. Came out less than an hour, fixed. I got hot water. I'm ready to go. It's Liberty Pure Solutions. I am Nestor. He's Luke. Lots of football, lots of baseball ahead, trading deadline. And, hey, the Ravens are back out on the field. We'll let you know how they look. Stay with us. We're Baltimore Positive.